Welcome to today's discourse. In continuation with the tradition of the last few weeks, I think what's going to be offered here is a little bit of a different perspective. It took me a long time to have the courage and the fortitude in my own practice to provide a different perspective on the experience of what it is to pursue truth, to know myself in the manner that I chose to do it. For many, many reasons that many of us share is that how do we know it's right? How do we know it's true? How do we know if we're just fooling ourselves? But there are many teachers that teach different things. There are many people that express different thoughts, and they don't always sync with each other. Therefore, the first and most important point that I want to emphasize is that in your pursuit of your life, the most reliable voice is your own. Now, in saying that, that's not to say that we can't delude ourselves. We do delude ourselves, often, too often. But if we are honest and open and willing to really look at our lives without judging or taking a preconception and trying to filter our experience to the best of our abilities, even if we do delude ourselves, eventually we will start to come around to what's really taking place. So thus, with my little introduction, we begin our different perspective. I was recently listening to a sutra, which is discussing the Buddha's description of how he decided to become the Buddha, or how he went into the life of practice, and how he eventually attained Nibbana, or Nirvana, which we must remember means extinguishing. It doesn't mean a blissful party with 72 virgins and as much wine as you want. It means extinguishing, complete immersion with the universe. So at the same time, the Buddha often insisted and reinforced that to think that extinguishing of Nibbana means there's nothing left is very incorrect. To think that extinguishing means that suddenly we're the whole universe is also not correct. There's something else that happens. And that can only be described and experienced when one's actually in that process. From where we are now, it's beyond our grasp. So when in the teachings, the Buddha used to tell people, enter the homeless life, what he really was saying to those who truly wanted to pursue wisdom is, if you really want the answers, if you really want the nth degree, the final and complete understanding of the nature of the universe and reality, then you enter the homeless life. Because short of entering the homeless life or becoming an ascetic or truly committing yourself totally to the path, the ultimate understanding will be very difficult to achieve. However, this understanding, this ultimate truth, is available and ready for everyone who truly wants to seek it. And yet at the same time, not everyone is available or ready to take this degree of commitment. And that's not a bad or a good thing. I'll reemphasize, that's not a bad or a good thing. It is a karmic condition. Are we all clear on what I'm saying here? It's a karmic condition. That determines how much we can get involved in this pursuit. And we're going to go into that in a moment. However, without taking the decision to go all the way, we can still progress in stages. And the proof of our progress is that we have a happier, a healthier, a more fulfilled, and a better balanced and content life. It's on this path that we get to know ourselves and our true heart-mind, which always beats together and in sync with the universal heart-mind, even though our conscious and often deluded perception of what is real and who we are prevents us from realizing the synchronicity in the whole process. Clear so far? Quinn, clear? Yeah?
Yeah.
So we need to listen, question, read and understand clearly what is being taught and then test it in our lives. Not because some teacher tells us this is what's right or this is how we should act or this is what we should think. We have to test it in our lives to make sure that it's practicable and workable for us so that we also can see the results, which will verify if we're on the right path for ourselves. Is that clear? Over the last 5 or 6 discourses, I've often expressed how practicality, ability to do in everyday life, is what I'm trying to share with you in terms of philosophy, whether it be Stoicism or whether it be Buddha Dharma or whether it be Socratic thinking or whether it be Islamic or Judaic or Catholic. It has to be practical. It has to make our lives better. And the proof of that is we're happier. We're more content. We're healthier. We are more fulfilled in a good way. And we're in harmony with the world and universe around us. That's the verification. So the Buddha actually put forward the Eightfold Noble Path as part of the Four Noble Truths. You may recall that was in our first discourse way back there, the Eightfold Noble Path. And I have to say, in every discourse that I have attended by some very, very prominent and very well-esteemed and very recognized Buddhist instructors, it has always been emphasized that it's non-sequential. I now consider and express my thoughts, as I am with you, that it indeed is sequential, and that saying it is non-sequential is a misunderstanding of the teaching.
What is sequential?
Sequential means first, second, third, fourth, fifth. So in the Eightfold Noble Path, there's a first step, a second step, a third step, until we get to the eighth step. Whereas often it is taught, oh, sometimes the eighth step happens, sometimes the third step happens, sometimes the fourth step happens. It can all happen at the same time. I disagree with that now. And I'm going to give a brief example of why I disagree with that. And we're just going to talk of the first three stages. The first stage of the Eightfold Noble Path is understanding. Why is it first? It's because we need to understand what it means to be real and pursue wisdom. If we don't understand what it is to be real and pursue wisdom, why would we choose to do it? In order to do this, we need to know where we are and hopefully a little bit about who we are and what pursuing the path will be like. Because if we don't know where we are in the world, if we don't know who we are, we don't have any idea of what it means to pursue the path, how are we going to understand what we need to do, how we need to follow it? Now, these are my opinions. These are for you to consider. Anytime you can agree, disagree, I'm not giving you the law. It's just my current considerations after thinking about this and reflecting for a long, long time. The second step is right resolve. Once we begin to understand, then we can resolve or commit to the process without thinking about where, what, how, or who it is, so that we can really develop courage and bravery and dedication and commitment to the process and hopefully not go astray. Because it's very easy to go astray. And there are a multitude of examples out there for us to follow to go astray. So first we understand. With understanding comes the ability to make a decision, resolve. In one of our discourses over the last several weeks, I presented to you that most people talk about the Buddha's realization under the tree as the first step being him sitting down and doing the concentration practice. And you may recall that I took a different perspective on that. I expressed the perspective that his first step was resolving to sit under the tree and not move until he either understood it or they found his bones so many years later. He could only take that resolve when he finally understood what it meant to do the path. And now one of the most important steps on the path, the third one, is called right speech. Right speech is a very interesting thing. And we're not going to go too much into depth today because I want to do a whole discourse on this because it's so deep. But with understanding and resolve, we can then begin to practice right speech. To be able to speak correctly, we need to first have the motor skills to make sound. I need my jaw. I need my muscles. I need to bring out the air. I need to be able to train the vocal cords to pronounce a sound. Then I need to be able to form words. 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 And then I need to understand what the words mean. Word is a word. Is it a word or is it a word? Is it a word? It's a word. Then I need to understand how to put the words together. How to put the words together. And then I have to have an idea of what I want to say. How I put the words together will help me to understand and arrive at the idea that I've already considered before putting the words together of what I want to say. And then how to say what I want to say. Do I want to shout or do I want to speak very softly and very slowly or very quietly? And hopefully with this, I will avoid misunderstanding and be able to then express what I want to express to somebody else. So speech, in fact, involves every aspect of our consciousness. Not just our consciousness, but who we're speaking to. We're all from different backgrounds, different cultures, different languages. So words can never be exactly correct. And all this is taken into consideration as well. And so speech becomes so important that that is why after we understand what the pursuit of wisdom is about, after we resolve we're going on this journey, the first practice is how we speak, because it involves every aspect of our consciousness. And if we cannot practice the process of correctly and honestly and rightly speaking, how are we going to go on to practicing other things like right concentration or right intention or right work or right samadhi or right vipassana, meditation? Speech is the very fundamental thing that we have control over, as we have control over our breath, which is why breathing is used as a fundamental practice in the Buddha Dharma, because you have control over your breath. And now I want to bring in Epictetus. Epictetus said there are things within your sphere of control. There are things outside your sphere of control. If you worry about the things outside your sphere of control, you're in trouble. But if you deal with the things inside your sphere of control, you'll be able to manage and possibly even achieve eudaimonia, or a virtuous life, or even perhaps nibbana, if that's where you want to go. Breath is within our control. Speech is within our control. And so the Buddha put speech right after we understood what we're going to do, right after we decide what we're going to do. Here is the first thing we can practice. It's in our control. It's not some theoretical, metaphysical out there. It's something we can control every single day. From the morning we wake up, and if we wake up next to somebody, we turn to them and say good morning, how we say it, to the very last thing we go to bed, we turn to someone next and say good night, and everything in between. So right there is our first practice. We don't have to sit cross-legged and go, oh. We don't have to light incense. We don't have to do candles. We just have to be aware of our speech.
Arin?
Yes.
Just to be fair to the your master, the other people, will you mind presenting why they think the order doesn't matter? What would be their logic, as you know, to be able to mix the different states?
That's an excellent question, Patrick. That is a question that I spent 50 years of my life asking myself until I arrived where I arrived now. The reason often given is saying that different people evolve in different stages. They have different stages of awareness. Therefore, some people will be more skilled at meditation, others will be more skilled at action, others will be more skilled at intention. And for me, that didn't make sense, because how can a person be skilled in intention? What if a person is skilled in intention, but they can't speak with kindness and compassion? Then there's a short circuit there. If a master can sit on a mountain and chant Om and fly through the ethers and project their consciousness all over the world and envelop everybody, and yet they can't be kind to this to the very basic animal that walks next to them, then how can that be, how does that sync together? So I think the reason why it was expressed that way is that it was a misunderstanding of everybody's in a different karmic condition, which is true. We all are in different karmic conditions. However, the keys to practice the resolution of our karmic conditions, I think, were given by the Buddha in a very specific order so that someone will not skip a very important state. I'll give another example of what I'm saying. Oftentimes, in my experience, I've listened to very well-known, in this case, Buddhist teachers, because it's a Buddhist topic of philosophy, and they will be skillful meditation masters, but they'll have all kinds of issues about how to deal with people emotionally. And in the news, there has been a lot of sexual misbehavior among many lamas that came to the West, not just lamas from Tibetan, but other traditions as well. So if they have this mastery over the meditative stage, which would be stage, say, 7 or 8, but they can't have right intention at stage 4, and they can't speak honestly and directly to their students at stage 3, then there is a big gap that's taken place. So I believe the simplest and perhaps too simple for many people answer to your question is that it was too difficult to order themselves in that way. It required too much self-discipline and a certain degree of humility. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, that because everybody wanted to be a master. This is a problem I face in my life. Sam, we talked about it last week. Sam knows me so many years. Why I haven't taught Patrick? You know, we've talked about it. Why I haven't taught earlier? Because there are these factors. How do we put together the factor of what we know and what we're aware of with a genuine integrity of sharing? As I've been mentioning over the last discourses, I've been listening to many of the suttas recently, and different things pop out, things that never popped out before. One thing that pops up a lot is the monks and the Buddha always refer to each other as friend, except when they refer to the Buddha as master, but everybody else is friend. Monks that are supposedly as enlightened as the Buddha are referred to as friend by other monks, and they refer to other monks as friend. And that really caught my attention. There was a certain degree of recognition that wherever we are on the path, we are all fellow seekers. We're all friends. Some have more skills in this way. Some others have more skill in that way. But the essential humility to recognize our own process in walking the path is fundamental to being able to have right speech first, then right action, then right livelihood. All kind of okay, understood? Not necessarily at all that you agree, just that you understand a different point of view. Good, so I want to introduce another aspect that's very common today. People talk about socially engaged Buddhism in that sense, or from our perspective at Path to Wisdom, we talk about being socially engaged in a wise way on a path to wisdom. So let's consider karma. And karma, we're going to consider something that's called the Bodhisattva vow. And I've explained this before, I'll repeat it again. A Bodhisattva vow was when the teachings moved into certain different societies, there was a concept that one shouldn't only seek one's own enlightenment, but one should help all the others on this planet who are also suffering to attain it. And therefore, by taking a bodhisattva vow, I vow not to enter through the doors of enlightenment until all other beings have gone first. So without knowing the clear consequences, let's also keep in mind, again, Epictetus's comment of know what is in our sphere of influence and what is not in our sphere of influence. And that, to me, is also very similar to the Bodhisattva vow and karma. Things that are outside our sphere of influence, if we choose to get involved with them, we're just creating more karma. The word in the Dharma is called papancha, which means proliferation. Whereas if we focus on what is in our sphere of influence, we can then really have an effect. And it just doesn't mean our selfish center, but it means integrating with others.